British Sky Broadcasting, Universal, Manifesto Film Sales, and Circle Films present a Ted and Jim Pedas, Bill Durkin, and Ben Barinholtz production, Barton Fink, directed by Joel Cohen. Starring John Turturro as Barton Fink, John Goodman as Charlie Meadows, Judy Davis as Audrey Taylor, Michael Lerner as Jack Lipnick, John Mahoney as W.P. Mayhew, Tony Shalhoub as Ben Geisler, John Polito as Lou, Steve Buscemi as Chet, and David Warrilow as Garland Stanford. Audio described by Therese Birch on behalf of MCS Agency. New York City, 1941. Playwright Barton Fink stands in the wings watching actors performing his play on stage. He has a sallow complexion, very curly black hair, and wears round black-rimmed glasses. He clutches a rolled-up program in his fist and looks tense as he listens to the cast speaking his words.
Yell and roars by at 3 a.m. like a cast iron wind. Kiss him goodbye for me, Murray. I'll miss him. Like hell I will.
3 men again.
Not anymore, Lil. I'm awake now. Awake for the first time in years. Uncle Dave said it. Daylight is a dream if you lived with your eyes closed. Well, my eyes are open now. I see the choir, and I know they're dressed in rags, but we're part of that choir. Yeah, both of us. And you, Murray, and Uncle Dave, too.
The sun's coming up, kid. They'll be hawking the fish down on Fulton Street.
Let them hawk. Let them sing their hearts out.
That's it, kid. Take that ruined choir. Make it sing.
So long, Murray.
So long.
An old man in the wings puts down his paper.
We'll hear from that kid. And I don't mean a postcard.
He stands off stage.
Fish! Fresh fish!
He goes back to operate the curtains.
Let's spit on our hands and get to work. It's late, Maury.
Not anymore, Lil. It's early.
Barton mouths the last words. The old man brings the curtain down. An actor goes back on stage to join the rest of the cast, taking their bows. Barton stares unblinking. Two men, smiling and clapping, appear either side of him. Two of the cast beckon Barton on stage. Looking nervous, he goes on. The audience get to their feet. Barton looks over his shoulder, standing downstage. A busy restaurant. The maitre d' leads Barton to a table.
Your table is ready, Mr. Fink. In fact, several members of your party have already arrived.
Is Garland Stanford here?
He called to say he'd be a few minutes late. Ah, here we are.
Barton, Barton, so glad you could make it. You know Richard St. Clair and Poppy Conahan.
Charm, charm, charm.
We're drinking champagne, dear boy, in honor of the occasion. Have you seen the Herald?
Not yet.
Well, I don't want to embarrass you, but Caven could hardly contain himself. But more important, Richard and Poppy here loved the play.
Weeping. Copious tears. What did the Herald say?
I happen to have it with me.
Please, Derek.
Bare Ruined Choirs, Triumph of the Common Man. The star of Bare Ruined Choirs was nowhere to be seen on the stage of the Belasco last night. Though the thespians involved all acquitted themselves admirably. The find of the evening was the author of this drama about simple folk, fishmongers, in fact, whose brute struggle for existence cannot quite quell their longing for something higher. The playwright finds nobility in the most squalid corners and poetry in the most callous speech. A tough new voice in the American theater has arrived, and the owner of that voice is named Barton Fink.
Well, they'll be wrapping fish in it in the morning, so I guess it's not a total waste.
Cynic.
All right, but I can't start listening to the critics, and I can't kid myself about my own work. A writer writes from his gut. His gut tells him what's good and what's merely adequate.
I don't pretend to be a critic, but Lord knows I have a gut, and my gut tells me it's simply marvelous.
And a charming gut it is.
Oh, you dog. Stop.
A bellboy carries a board paging Barton Fink through the restaurant.
I thought you were going to join us. Jesus, Garland, you left me alone with those people?
Don't panic, I'll join you in a minute.
We have to talk a little business. I've just been on the phone to Los Angeles. Barton, Capital Pictures wants to put you under contract. They've offered you $1,000 a week. I think I can get them to go as high as two.
To do what?
What do you do for a living?
I'm not sure anymore. I guess I'd try to make a difference.
Look, Barton, there's no pressure here because I respect you. A brief tenure in Hollywood could support you through the writing of any number of plays.
I don't know, Garland. My place is here right now. I feel I'm on the brink of success.
I'd say you're already enjoying some.
No, don't you see, Garland, not the kind of success where the critics fawn over you or the producers like Derek make a lot of money. No, a real success. The success we've been dreaming about. The creation of a new living theater of and about and for the common man. If I ran off to Hollywood, now I'd be making money, going to parties, meeting the big shots, sure, but I'd be cutting myself off from the wellspring of that success, from the common man.
Garland looks unconvinced.
I guess I'm spouting off again.
You see Kevin's review in the Herald?
No, what did it say?
Yeah, take my copy. You're the toast of Broadway, and you have an opportunity to redeem that for a little cash. Strike that, a lot of cash. The common man will still be here when you get back. Who knows? They may even have one or two of them out in Hollywood.
That's a rationalization, Garland.
Barton, it was a joke.
The two men stare at each other at the bar. Waves crash over a rock on a sandy beach. Barton wears a hat and an overcoat. Carrying two cases, he walks through a large, empty, gloomy, old-fashioned hotel foyer. He looks up at the ceiling as he approaches the reception desk. Behind him, a red quilted seat and an impressive staircase that divides in two. He puts down his cases and rings the bell. He taps his thumb on the desk and looks around at the staircase. He leans forward to look behind the desk where the noise is coming from. A trap door in the floor opens. A bellboy wearing a dark red uniform trimmed with gold climbs out and touches the bell.
Welcome to the Hotel Earl. May I help you, sir?
I'm checking in, Barton Fink.
Alrighty.
The bellboy goes through a box of booking forms.
Okay. F-I-N-K?
Barton nods.
Fink. Barton. That must be you, huh?
Must be.
Okay, then. Everything seems to be in order. Everything seems to be in order. Just...
Barton signs a large book.
Are you a trans or a res?
Excuse me?
Transient or resident?
I don't know. I mean, I'll be here indefinitely.
Res. That'll be $25.50 a week, payable in advance. Checkout time is 12 sharp, only you can forget about that on account of your res. Now, if you need anything at all, just pick up your personal in-room telephone and talk to me. My name is Chet. Although we do provide privacy for the residential guests, we are also a full-service hotel, including complimentary shoe shine. My name is Chet.
He writes his name on a note.
Okay.
Barton looks awkward as he puts the note in his pocket.
Those are only bags?
The others are being sent.
Welcome to Los Angeles, Mr. Fink.
Barton picks up his bags and carries them over to an old-fashioned lift, where a gray-haired man in uniform sits motionless on a stool.
Six, please.
The lift attendant slowly closes the gate.
Next stop, six. This stop, six.
Barton steps out of the lift into an extremely long corridor. It has curved, dark wood ceiling beams and is lined with Art Deco wall lights. The wallpaper is brown and green. He puts his luggage down outside a door and, bending, unlocks it. He enters his room, grim-faced. He stands still and surveys the room, gloomy in spite of the sunlight that streams through two narrow windows. There's an iron bedstead, chairs, lamps, and a desk. He walks over to the bed and puts down one case on the floor, the other on the yellow bedspread. The bed is very springy. He takes off his coat and carefully lays it across an orange armchair. He throws the key on the desk and, shielding his eyes, goes over to the sash window. He struggles to open it a crack, his hand slipping off the frame. He puts a black case on the desk and opens it to reveal a manual typewriter. He runs his finger along the space bar. He looks down at the hotel stationery and frowns. A broken pencil lies on the headed notepaper. He moves it. It leaves a white mark where it's been on the page for a long time. He looks at a picture on the wall above the desk. It's a rear view of a girl with dark hair in a bikini, sitting on the beach, shielding her eyes, looking out to sea under a striped umbrella. He stares at it, transfixed. He lies on his back on the bed without his glasses, eyes shut. He opens them and looks around. He reaches for his glasses and puts them on. He looks up at the ceiling with a patch of peeling paint and damp. He lies in the dark on his back on the bed. A portly man with a moustache shows Barton into a plush office.
Is that him? Is that Barton Fink? Let me at him. Let me put my arms around this guy. Let me hug this guy. How the hell are you?
Good trip? My name is Jack Lipnick. I run this dump. You know that. You read the papers. Lou treat me all right? Get everything you need? What the hell's the matter with your face? What the hell's the matter with his face, Lou?
Not as bad as it looks. It's just a mosquito in my room.
Place okay? Where'd we put him?
I'm at the Earl.
Never heard of it. Let's move him to the Grand or the Wilshire. Hell, he can stay at my place.
Thanks, but I wanted a place that was a little
less... Less Hollywood. Sure, say it. It's not a dirty word. Say whatever the hell you want. The writer is king here at Capitol Pictures. You don't believe me? Take a look at your paycheck at the end of every week. That's what we think of the writer. So what kind of pictures does he like?
Mr. Fink hasn't given a preference, Mr. Lipnick.
So how about it, Bart?
Well, to be honest, I don't go to the pictures much, Mr. Lipnick.
That's okay. That's just fine. You probably walked in here thinking that was going to be a handicap, thinking that we wanted people who knew something about the media, maybe even thinking there was all kinds of technical mumbo-jumbo to learn. You were dead wrong. We're only interested in one thing. Can you tell a story, Bart? Can you make us laugh? Can you make us cry? Can you make us want to break out? Enjoy a song. Is that more than one thing? Okay. The point is, I run this dump, and I don't know the technical mumbo-jumbo. Why do I run it? It's like a horse sense, goddammit. Showmanship! And also, and I hope Lou told you this, I am bigger and meaner and louder than any other kike in this town. Did you tell him that, Lou? And I don't mean my dick is bigger than yours. It's not a sexual thing, although you're the writer. You know more about that. Coffee?
Barton stares at Lipnick.
Yes, thank you.
Lou!
Lipnick, in a cream suit, gestures for Lou to go, then gets up and comes round to sit on his desk near Barton.
Used to have shares in the company. Ownership interest, got bought out in the 20s. Muscled out, according to some. Hell, according to me. So we keep him around. He's got a family, Porsche monkey. Sensitive, don't mention the old days. Oh, hell, say whatever you want. Look, Bart, barring a preference, we're going to put you to work in a wrestling picture, Wallace Beery. I say this because they tell me you know the poetry of the street, so that would rule out Westerns, pirate pictures, screwball, Bible, Roman. Look, I'm not one of those guys that thinks poetic. It's got to be fruity. We're together on that, aren't we? I mean, I'm from New York myself. Where? Minsk, if you want to go all the way back. Which we won't, if you don't mind, and I ain't asking. Now, people are going to say to you, Wallace Beery, wrestling, it's a B picture. You tell them. Bullshit! We do not make B pictures here at Capitol. Let's put a stop to that rumor right now.
Lou, looking world-weary, appears with a cup of coffee.
Thanks, Lou. Join us. Join us. We're talking about the Wally Beery picture.
Excellent picture.
Yeah, we got a treatment on it yet?
No, not yet, Jack. We just bought the story. Saturday Evening Post.
Ah, the hell with the story. Wally Beery is a wrestler. I want to know his hopes, his dreams. Naturally, you have to get mixed up with a bad element. And romantic interest. You know the drill. Romantic interest, or else a young kid, an orphan. What do you think, Lou? Wally a little too old for romantic interest? Look at me. A writer in the room, and I'm asking Lou what the goddamn story should be. Which is it, Bart? Orphan? Dame?
Barton, clutching his coffee, looks blank.
Both, maybe?
Lou looks at Lipnick.
Maybe we should do a treatment.
Hell. Let Bart take a crack at it. He'll get in the swing of things, or I don't know writers. Let's make it a Dame Bart. Keep it simple. We don't got to tackle the world the first time out. The important thing is we all wanted to have that Barton Fink feeling. I mean, I guess we all have that Barton Fink feeling. But since you're Barton Fink, I'm assuming you have it in spades. Seriously, Bart, I like you. We're off to a good start. All my writers will like you. I wouldn't have to get so goddamn involved. I'd like to see something by the end of the week.
Lou stands up and beckons Barton to follow.
Oh, heard about your show, by the way. My man in New York saw it. Tells me it's pretty damn powerful, pretty damn moving. A little fruity, he said. But I guess you know what you're doing. Thanks for your heart, Bob. We need more heart in motion pictures. We're all expecting great things.
Barton looks terrified, still holding his coffee, as Lou shows him out. The corridor at Hotel Earl. On either side, a pair of shoes outside every room. In his room, Barton types at his desk, a fan next to the typewriter. He has written, a tenement building on Manhattan's Lower East Side. Early morning traffic is audible. He smiles, turning the full stop to a comma and adds, as is. He looks up from his typewriter. He stares at the picture of the girl on the beach. His gaze falls on the green wallpaper below the picture. He looks nervous and swallows. He turns away from the desk on his swivel chair. He stands and slowly walks over to the door. He leans out, looking down the corridor at all the shoes lined up outside the doors. He looks troubled, leaning on the doorframe. He goes back into his room. He sits on the bed and stares at the phone on the bedside table.
Hello? Chet?
Speaking.
This is Barton Fink in room 621.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There's someone in the room next door to mine, 623. And making a lot of noise.
I'll take care of it right away, sir.
Thank you.
Barton looks anxiously over at his desk with the typewriter, lamp and fan, and the picture above it on the wall. Beyond it, the next room.
What? Huh? Who?
He looks at the door. Through the crack beneath it, he sees that someone is standing outside. He gets to his feet and slowly goes over to the door. It's a very tall, heavy man.
Did you...
Barton stares at him nervously.
Somebody just complained.
No, I didn't. I mean, I did call down. Not to complain exactly. I was just concerned that you might... Not that it's my business, but that you might be in some kind of distress. See, I was trying to work, and, it was difficult.
The big man in braces and a red tie is expressionless.
Yeah. I'm damn sorry if I bothered you. The damn wall's here. Well, I just apologize like hell. My name's Charlie Meadows. I guess we're neighbors.
Barton Fink.
Neighbor? I'd feel better about the damned inconvenience to let me buy you a drink.
That's all right, really. Thank you.
All right, hell. You trying to work? Me carrying on in there? Look, the liquor's good. What do you say? You got a glass? It's the least I can do.
Okay. A quick one. Sure.
Yeah, just a nip. I sure do forget myself sometimes. I feel like a heel, all the carryings on next door.
That's okay, I assure you. Just I was trying to work.
What kind of work do you do, Barton, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, I'm a writer, actually.
You don't say. That's a tough racket. My hat's off to anyone that can make a go of it. Damned interesting work, I'd imagine.
Can be. It's not easy, but...
Damn difficult, I'd imagine.
And what's your line, Mr. Meadows?
Hell no, call me Charlie. Well, Barton... You might say I sell peace of mind. Insurance is my game. Door to door, human contact, still the only way to move the merchandise. In spite of what you might think from tonight, I'm pretty good at it.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
Hell yes, because I believe in it. Fire, theft, and casualty are not things that only happen to other people. That's what I tell them. Writing doesn't work out, you may want to look into it. Providing for a basic human need, a fella could do worse.
Thanks. I'll keep that in mind.
What kind of scribbler are you? Newspaper man, did you say?
No. Actually, I'm writing for the pictures now.
Pictures? Jesus! Oh, I'm sorry, brother. I was just sitting here thinking I was talking to some ambitious youngster eager to make good. Hell, you've got it made, writing for the pictures? Beating out that competition? And me being patronizing? Is the egg showing or what?
That's okay. Actually, I am just starting out in the movies, though I was... Pretty well established in New York. Some renown there.
Oh, it's an exciting time then. Well, I'm not the best red mug on the planet, so I guess it's not surprising I didn't recognize your name. Jesus, I feel like a heel.
That's okay, Charlie. I'm a playwright. My shows have only played New York. The last one got a hell of a write-up in the Herald. I guess that's why they wanted me here.
Hell, why not? Everyone wants quality. Well, what kind of venue, that is to say, thematically,
what do I write about?
Caught me trying to be fancy. Yeah, that's it, Bart.
Oh, that's a good question. Strange as it may seem, Charlie, I guess I write about people like you. The average working stiff, the common man.
Well, ain't that a kick in the head?
Yeah, I guess it is. But in a way, that's exactly the point. There's a few people in New York. Hopefully, your numbers are growing.
who feel we have an opportunity now to forge something real out of everyday experience. Create a theater for the masses based on a few simple truths, not on some shop-worn abstractions about drama that don't hold true today if they ever did. I don't guess this means much to you.
Hell yeah, I could tell you some stories.
And that's the point, that we all have stories. The hopes and dreams of the common man are as noble as those of any king. The stuff of life. Why shouldn't it be the stuff of theater? God damn it, why should that be such a hard pill to swallow? Don't call it new theater, Charlie. Call it real theater. Call it Al theater.
I can see you feel pretty strongly about it.
Well, I don't mean to get up on my high horse, but why shouldn't we look at ourselves up there? Who cares about the fifth Earl of Bastrop and Lady Higginbottom and who killed Nigel Grinch Gibbons?
I can feel my butt getting sore already.
Exactly, Charlie. You understand what I'm saying a lot more than some of these literary types because you're a real man.
And I could tell you some stories.
Sure you could. And yet many writers do everything in their power to insulate themselves from the common man, from where they live, from where they trade, from where they fight and love and converse and... So naturally, their work suffers and regresses into empty formalism and, well, I'm spouting off again. But to put it in your language, the theater becomes as phony as a $3 bill.
Well, I guess that's a tragedy right there.
You're all right, Charlie. I'm glad you stopped by. I'm sorry if I, well, you know, sometimes I run on.
Well, Christ, if there's any way I could contribute or help or whatever.
Sure, Charlie, you can help by just being yourself.
Well, I can tell you some stories. And look, I'm sorry as hell about the interruption. Too much revelry late at night, you forget there's other people in the world.
Charlie salutes and leaves. Barton holds up his glass to him. He sits at his desk, reading his script in the typewriter. It reads, a tenement building on Manhattan's Lower East Side. Early morning traffic is audible, as is the cry of the fishmongers. He looks up at the picture of the girl on the beach. He turns round to see a piece of wallpaper above his bed slowly peel off the wall. He gets up and climbs up onto the springy bed. Reluctantly, he reaches out and pushes the slimy paper back onto the wall with the flat of his hand. He looks at his hand. It's covered in something clear and sticky. He sniffs it. He looks up at the ceiling, mouth hanging open. The words, reference to your letter of the 12th, are being typed. Barton sits in an outer office looking around, flexing his fingers impatiently. An elderly secretary types at a desk. Barton checks his watch. A man in shirt sleeves enters and addresses the secretary.
Are they eating on the lot today? Who's this?
Barton Fink, it's Keesler.
Geisler. Oh, please.
I'm a writer, Mr. Geisler. Ted Oakham said I should drop by this morning to see you about...
Interact.
Huh? No, I'm a...
We need Indians for a Norman Steel Western.
I'm a writer. Ted Oakham...
Think about that thing. Writers come and go. We always need Indians.
I'm a writer. Ted Oakham said you're producing this Wallace Beery picture I'm working on.
Ah, Ted Oakham. Ted Oakham doesn't know shit. They've assigned me enough pictures for a goddamn year. Listen, what Ted Oakham doesn't know, you could almost squeeze into the Hollywood Bowl.
Then who should I talk to?
Give me Lou Breeze.
The secretary hands him the phone.
Is he in for Mr. Geisler?
Geisler. Whoa, how's Litnick's ass smell this morning? Yeah? Yeah? Yeah, all right, listen, the reason I'm calling, I got a writer here, Fink. All screwy, since I'm producing that Wallace Beery wrestling picture. What am I, the goddamn janitor around here? Yeah, who'd you get that from? Well, tell Litnick he can kiss my dimpled ass. No, no, all right. Shit. All right, no, all right.
He hands the phone back to his secretary.
Okay, Fink, let's chow.
A busy restaurant. Barton sits at a table with Geisler.
Don't worry about it. It's just a B picture. I bring it in on budget, they book it without even screening it. Life is too short.
Lipnick said he wanted to look at the script, see something by the end of the week.
Stirring joke. Stirring joke. He forgot about it before your ass left his sofa.
Okay. Just having trouble getting started. It's funny, I'm blocked up. I just feel like I need some kind of indication of what's expected.
Wallace Beery, wrestling picture. What do you need, a roadmap? Look, you're confused. You need guidance?
Geisler takes a mouthful of milk.
Talk to another writer.
Who?
Oh, Jesus. You throw a rock in here, you'll hit one. Do me a favor, Fink. Throw it hard.
Geisler stands up, throwing down his napkin on the table and leaves. Barton is in the gents at the urinal. As he finishes, Barton looks round anxiously at the cubicles where the noise is coming from. Crouching, he peers under the door and can see white shoes and a man kneeling on a handkerchief in front of the bowl. The man in the cubicle gets to his feet, picking up the handkerchief. Barton hurriedly stands up and walks away to the basins. A dapper man with a grey moustache and bow tie emerges from the cubicle, tucking his handkerchief in his breast pocket. He stands next to Barton at the basins and gargles and spits. Barton looks across at him nervously. The man smiles briefly. The man turns to Barton.
Bill Mayhew, sorry about the odor.
Barton Fink.
They shake hands. The man leaves the basin.
Jesus, W.P.?
I beg your pardon?
W.P. Mayhew, the writer?
Just Bill, please.
Bill! You're the finest novelist of our time.
Why, thank you, son. How kind.
I had no idea you were in Hollywood.
All of us undomesticated writers eventually make our way out here to the Great Salt Lake. That's probably why I always have such a powerful thirst. A little social lubricant, Mr. Fink?
No, it's a little early for me.
Mayhew throws back his head, swigging from a hip flask.
Billy? If I'm imposing, you should say so. I know I know you're very busy. I just wanted to ask you a favor. Have you ever written a wrestling picture?
Mayhew looks at Barton's hands.
You are dripping, sir. Mr. Fink, they have not invented a genre of picture that Bill Mayhew has not at one time or other been invited to essay.
Well, what
yes, I have taken my stab at the wrestling form, as I have stabbed at so many others, and with as little success.
Well, how do you...
I gather that you are a freshman here, eager for an upperclassman's counsel. However, just at the moment, I have drinking to do. Why don't you stop by my bungalow, which is number 15, later on this afternoon, and we will discuss wrestling scenarios and other things literary.
He raises his flask. Barton is at the studios, walking past the writer's offices. He stops outside number 15. A sign on the door says, writer, Mayhew, picture, slave ship. Barton hesitates because of the noise, then knocks.
Can I help you?
I'm sorry, my name is Fink. Bill asked me to drop by this afternoon. Is he, in?
Mr. Mayhew is indisposed at the moment.
Where's my honey?
Is he, honey? Is he okay?
He'll be fine.
She steps out of the door.
Mr. Fink, I'm Audrey Taylor, Mr. Mayhew's personal secretary.
Where's my honey?
I know this almost sound horrid. I really do apologize.
She looks embarrassed.
When he can't ride, he drinks. That's so embarrassing.
How about you? Will you be all right?
I'll be fine. Are you a writer, Mr. Fink?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm working on a wrestling... Please call me Barton.
I'll tell Bill you dropped by.
I'm sure he'll want to reschedule your appointment.
Perhaps you and I can get together at some point also. I'm sorry if that sounds abrupt. I don't know anyone here in town.
She smiles at Barton.
Perhaps the three of us, Mr. Fink.
Please, Barton.
Barton. You see, Barton, I'm not just Bill's secretary. Bill and I are in love.
Where's my honey?
Look, I know this must look funny. I'm sorry. Please, don't judge us, Mr. Fink.
Barton stands by the door listening, head on one side. A small box written on it, "Hope these will do the trick, Chet." Barton tears off the wrapping and opens the packet of drawing pins. Standing on the bed, he pins the peeling wallpaper back to the wall. He smooths the paper against the wall. It's dripping with moisture. Barton slowly puts his ear against the wall, leaning with his hands on it. He looks over to the other side of the room where the typewriter is surrounded by balls of screwed-up paper. He sits at the desk. He stares down at the typewriter and the paper in it. He has not added anything to the script.
Howdy, neighbor.
Charlie, how are you?
Oh, Jesus, I hope I'm not interrupting you again. Heard you walking around in here. Figured I'd drop by.
Yeah, come on in. Have a seat. I haven't really gotten started yet. What happened to your ear?
Yeah, an ear infection. Chronic thing. Goes away for a while, then it comes back. I gotta put cotton in it to staunch the flow of pus. Don't worry, it's not contagious.
You seen a doctor?
Doctors, what's he gonna tell me? Can't trade my head in for a new one.
Yeah, I guess you're stuck with the one you got.
I'd invite you over to my place, but it's a goddamn mess. You married, Bart?
Nope.
I myself have yet to be lassoed. Hey, Bart. Ouch.
Charlie shows the lining of his tie to Barton. It's a picture of a topless girl.
Got a sweetheart?
No. I guess it's something about my work. I get so worked up over it, I don't know. I don't really have a lot of attention left over, so it would be a little unfair.
Yeah, ladies do ask for attention. In my experience, they pretend to give it, but it's generally a smokescreen for demanding it back with interest. How about family, Bart? How are you fixing that department?
Well, my folks live in Brooklyn with my uncle.
Mine have passed on. Yeah, it's just the three of us now. What's that expression?
He taps his head.
Me, myself, and I.
Sure. That's tough. But in a sense, we're all alone in the world, aren't we, Charlie? I'm often surrounded by family and friends, but...
You're no stranger to loneliness, then. I guess I got no beef, especially where the dames are concerned. In my line of work, I got opportunities galore, always on the wing, you know what I'm saying. I could tell you stories to curl your hair, but it looks like you've already heard them. That's me in Kansas City plying my trade. That was taken by one of my policyholders. They're more than just customers to me, Barton. They really appreciate what I have to offer them. You see, her hubby was out of town at the time, and they were carrying fire and life. The third quarter payment was way past due.
You know, in a way, I envy you, Charlie. Your daily routine, you know what's expected. You know the drill. My job is to plumb the depths, so to speak. Dredge up something from inside. Something honest. I gotta tell you, the life of the mind, there's no roadmap for that territory. and exploring it can be painful. The kind of pain most people don't know anything about.
Charlie is looking at his feet.
This must be boring you.
Not at all. It's damned interesting.
Yeah. Probably sounds a little grand for someone who's writing a wrestling picture for Wallace Beery.
Beery? You got no beef there. He's good. A hell of an actor. Though for my money, you can't beat Jack Oakey. A stitch Oakey. Funny stuff, funny stuff. But don't get me wrong. Beery, a wrestling picture, could be a pip. Could be a pip. Wrestled myself some back in school. I guess you know the basic moves.
Nope. I never even watched any. I'm not that interested in the act itself.
Okay, but hell, you should know what it's about. I can show you the wrestling basics in about 30 seconds. You're a little out of your weight class, but just for the purposes of demonstration.
That's all right, really.
Not a bit of it, compadre. Easiest thing in the world. You just get down on your knees to my left here. Slap your right hand here, your left hand here. Come on, champ, you can do it. Come on. Come. Come.
Barton reluctantly grasps Charlie's torso.
Okay, right there. All right. Now, when I say ready, wrestle, you try and pin me and I try and pin you. That's the whole game, got it?
Yeah, okay.
Ready? Ah! Ah! 1, 2, 3. Damn, here we go again. Gonna wake up the downstairs neighbors. I didn't hurt you, did I?
It's okay, it's okay.
Well, that's all wrestling is, except usually there's more grunting and squirming before the pin. Well, it's your first time and you're out of your weight class. Jesus, I did hurt you. I sure do apologize. I'm just a big, clumsy lug. I sure do apologize. You sure you're okay?
I'm fine, really. Actually, it's been helpful.
He hands Barton a cloth and helps him up.
But I guess I should get to work.
Well, it wasn't fair of me to do that. I'm pretty well endowed physically. Don't feel bad, though. I wouldn't be much of a match for you at metal gymnastics. Give me a holler if you need anything.
Barton nods, the cloth on the back of his neck. He stands in front of the picture of the girl on the beach, then sits. A book title page, Nebuchadnezzar by W.P. Mayhew. To Barton, may this little entertainment divert you in your sojourn amongst the Philistines. Bill signs his name, shuts the book, and tosses it down on the table for Barton.
If I close my eyes, I can almost smell the live oak.
That's chicken fat, Bill.
Well, my olfactory's turning womanish on me, lying and deceitful. Still, I must say, I haven't felt a peace like this since the grand productive days. Don't you find it so, Barton? Ain't right in peace.
Barton chews on a chicken leg.
Well, actually, no, Bill.
They are sitting at a roadside picnic table.
No, I've always found that writing comes from a great inner pain. Maybe it's a pain that comes from a realization that one must do something for one's fellow man to help somehow ease his suffering. Maybe it's personal pain. At any rate, I don't believe good work is possible without it.
Well, me, I just enjoy making things up. Yes, sir. Escape. It's what I can't write. Can't escape myself. I don't want to rip my head off and run screaming through the street with my balls in a fruit picker's pail.
He grabs a bottle.
This'll sometimes help.
That doesn't help anything, Bill.
That's true, Bill. I've never found that to help my writing.
You were writing? Son, have you ever heard the story of Solomon's Mammy?
Barton, you should read this. I think it's Bill's finest, or among his finest, anyway.
So now I'm supposed to roll over like an old bitch dog getting my belly scratched?
Bill.
Look, maybe it's none of my business, but don't you think a man with your talent, that your first obligation is to your gift? Shouldn't you be doing whatever you have to do to work again?
Well, what would that be, son?
I don't know exactly. But I do know what you're doing with that drink. You're cutting yourself off from your gift and from Audrey and from your fellow man and from everything your art is about.
Oh, no, son. I'm building a levee. Gulp by gulp, brick by brick. Putting up a levee to keep that raging river of manure from lapping at my door.
Maybe you better too, Barton, before you get buried under his manure.
Mahoney pretends to be impatient with me, Barton, but she'll put up with anything.
Not anything, Bill. Don't test me.
You're lucky she puts up with you as much as she does.
I'm a... Maybe to a schoolboy's eye. People who know about the human heart, though, maybe they'd say Bill over here. He gives his honey love, and she pays him back with pity. The basest coin there is.
Stop it, Bill.
Gone are the days when my heart was young and gay. Gone are my friends from the cotton fields away. Gone from the earth to a better land I know. I hear the gentle voices calling, old Black Joe.
Bill gets up unsteadily and urinates against a tree. Audrey sighs, then goes over to him.
My head is bending low. I hear the gentle...
She puts her hand on his back.
The truth, my honey, is a taunt that does not bear scrutiny. Breach my levy at your peril.
He knocks her over and walks off.
My friend,
son of a bitch. That son of a bitch!
Don't get me wrong, he's a fine writer.
She lifts her shoulders on the verge of tears.
Are you all right?
She nods.
Audrey, you can't
put up... Barton!
You can't put up with this.
She sobs on his shoulder.
I feel so sorry for him.
What? He's a son of a bitch.
No. No. He sometimes just... Well, he thinks about Estelle. His wife still lives in Fayetteville. She's...
Audrey shakes her head.
Disturbed.
Really?
Bill staggers off.
I'll just walk on down to the Pacific and there I'll improvise.
He'll wander back when he's sober and apologize. He always does.
Okay, but that doesn't excuse his behavior.
Empathy requires understanding.
What? What don't I understand?
Oh, my head is hanging low. I hear the devil voices calling. Oh, my God.
Bill slings his bottle away on the roadside. Barton, clothed, lies on his side on the bed, asleep in the light of the bedside lamp, his glasses skewed. He slaps his cheek to squash the mosquito that's landed on him. He looks up at the pool of lamplight on the ceiling. He sits up, looking apprehensive. He looks over at the desk and the typewriter, lamp, fan, and increasing pile of screwed-up paper. He gets up and sits at the desk, adjusts his chair, and rests his chin on his hand. In his typewriter, a tenement building in Manhattan's Lower East Side. We faintly hear the cry of the fishmongers. It's too early for us to hear traffic. Later, perhaps we will. He puts his feet into a pair of shoes under the desk. They are much too big for him. He looks at his typewriter with a distasteful expression. He has added the words, a large man in tights.
I hope these are your shoes.
Charlie.
Because that would mean they gave you mine.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, they did. Come on in.
Jesus, what a day I had.
They sit on the bed.
Isn't it one of those days?
Yeah, seems like nothing but lately.
Jesus, what a day. Felt like I couldn't have sold ice water in the Sahara. Jesus, okay, so you don't want insurance. Okay, so that's your loss. But God, people can be rude. Feel like I have to talk to a normal person like you just to restore a little of my...
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I could use a little lift myself.
A little lift, yeah. Good thing they bottle it, huh, pal? Did I say rude? People can be goddamn cruel. Especially some of these housewives. Okay, so I have a weight problem. That's my cross to bear. I don't know.
defense mechanism.
Defense against what? Insurance? Something they need? Something they should be grateful to me for offering? A little peace of mind.
Charlie shakes his head, holding the bottle.
Finally decided to knock off early. Take your advice. I want to see a doctor about this. He told me I had an ear infection. $10, please. I says, hell, I told you my ear was infected. Why don't you give me $10? Well, that led to an argument.
He drinks from the bottle.
Listen to me, bellyache. As if my problems amounted to a hill of beans. How goes the life of the mind?
Well, it's been better. I can't seem to get going on this thing. That one idea, the one that lets you get started, I still haven't gotten it. Maybe I only had one idea in me, my play. Maybe once that was done, I was done being a writer. Christ, I feel like a fraud, sitting here staring at this paper.
Those two lovebirds next door driving you nuts?
How do you know about that?
Know about it? I can practically see how they're doing it. Brother, I wish I had a piece of that. Seems like I hear everything that goes on in this dump. Pipes or something.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Oh, you'll lick this picture business, believe me. You got a head on your shoulders. And what is it they say? Where there's a head, there's hope.
Where there's life, there's hope.
See, that proves you really are a writer.
There's hope for you too, Charlie. Tomorrow, I bet you sell a half dozen policies.
Thanks, brother, but the fact is, I gotta pull up stakes for a while.
Barton looks unhappy, standing in the bathroom doorway.
You leaving?
In a few days. Out to your stomping grounds, as a matter of fact, New York City. Things have gotten all balled up at the head office.
I'm truly sorry to hear that, Charlie. I miss you.
Well, hell, buddy, don't pull a long face. This is home to me. I keep a room here, and I'll be back sooner or later. And mark my words, by the time I get back, your picture will be finished. I know it.
New York can be pretty cruel to strangers, Charlie. If you need a home-cooked meal, you just look up Sam and Lillian Fink. They live on Fulton Street with my Uncle Molly.
Barton hands Charlie a note with their numbers. They look over at the paper peeling off the wall. Charlie puts the note in his shirt pocket.
Christ. Your room does that, too.
I guess the heat's sweating off the wallpaper.
What a dump. I guess this must seem pretty pathetic to a guy like you.
Well.
But it's pathetic, isn't it? I mean, to a guy from New York?
What do you mean?
It's kind of heat. Pathetic.
Well, I guess you pick your poison.
That's all they say.
Don't pick up and leave without saying goodbye.
Of course not, compadre. You'll see me again.
Charlie leaves. Barton sits down at his desk. Arms folded, he leans over his typewriter, looking melancholy. He bows his head and pushes his chair back, away from the desk, and leans back, putting his arms behind his head. He stares up at the ceiling. He screws up his eyes, then opens them, looking up at the ceiling again. Secretary is hammering away at her typewriter, looking miserable. Barton waits in the outer office, chewing a finger.
Bang on you. Dad, you're a corpse.
You got me.
Okay, go. You son of a gun.
Yeah, Fink.
Geisler beckons Barton into his office.
Come on.
What do you got for me? What the hell happened to your face?
Nothing. It's just a mosquito bite.
Yeah, like hell it is. There no mosquitoes in Los Angeles. Mosquitoes breed in swamps. This is a desert. What do you got for me?
Well, I...
On the Beery picture. Where are we? What do you got?
Well, I'm having a little trouble getting started.
Christ, Jesus, started? You mean you don't have anything yet?
Well, not much.
What the hell do you think this is? Hamlet? Gone with the Wind Ruggles of Red? It's a goddamn B picture. Big men in tights, you know the drill.
I'm afraid I don't really understand that genre. Maybe that's the problem.
Understand shit. I thought you were going to consult another writer on this.
Well, I've talked to Bill May.
Bill May? May, you? Some help? The guy's a souse.
He's a great writer.
A great souse.
You don't understand.
Souse.
He's insane because he can't write.
Souse! Souse!
Can't write. And he manages to write his name on the back of his paycheck every week. But I thought no one cared about this picture.
You thought? Where the hell did you get that from, you thought? Listen, I don't know what the hell you said to Lipnick, but the son of a bitch likes you. You understand that, Fink? He likes you. He's taken an interest. Never make Lipnick like you. Never!
I don't understand.
Yes, he likes you. He's taken an interest. What the hell did you say to him?
I didn't say anything.
Well, he's taken an interest. That means he'll make your life hell, which I could care less about. But since I drew the short straw to supervise this turkey, he's going to be all over me, too. Fat ass son of a bitch called me yesterday to ask me how it's going. Don't worry, I covered for you. I told him you were making progress. We were all very excited. I told him it was great. Understand that? So now my ass is on the line. He wants you to tell him all about it tomorrow.
I can't write anything by tomorrow.
Who said write? Jesus, Jack can't read. You gotta tell it to him. Tell him something, for Christ's sake.
What do I tell him?
Geisler reaches for the telephone.
Yes, Mr.
Geisler. Rejection! Jerry, Ben Geisler here. Yeah, any of the screening rooms free this afternoon? Good! Book it for me. I got a writer here, Fink. He's coming in, you're gonna show him wrestling pictures. Which one? I don't give a shit which ones! Wrestling pictures! Wait a minute. Isn't Victor Soderbergh shooting one now? Yeah, well, show him some of the dailies on that.
Okay, Ben, I'll show
him. All right. This'll give you some ideas. 8:15 tomorrow morning at Lipnick's house.
He hands him a note of the address.
Ideas. Broad strokes. Don't cross me, Fink.
Black and white footage.
Devil on a Devil on a canvas, 12 apple, take one.
Action! I will destroy him!
God, 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 God!
Devil on a canvas, 12 apple, take two.
Action! I will destroy him!
God, God!
Devil on a canvas, 12 apple, take four.
Action! I will destroy him!
God, God, God!
Devil on a canvas, 12 apple, take five.
I will destroy him!
12 apple, take six.
I will destroy him!
12 apple, take seven.
I will destroy him!
12 bacon, take one.
I will destroy him!
Looking uncomfortable, Barton watches film of two wrestlers gripping each other in the ring.
12 Charlie, take one.
Two wrestlers roll on the canvas.
Take seven.
Grimacing, the wrestlers grapple, lying on top of each other. Barton stares at the screen. There are two words on the sheet in Barton's typewriter. Graham, ? And Dame, ? He paces the room, scratching his head, biting his nails. He suddenly stops and checks his watch. It's 12:30.
Front desk.
Hello, Chet. This is Barton Fink in room 621. Could you try a number for me in Hollywood?
Sure.
Slosson 643-04.
Right away, sir.
Pick it up.
Hello?
Audrey, I need help. I know it's late and I shouldn't be calling you like this. Believe me, I wouldn't have if I could see any alternative, but I'm sorry. Listen, how are you? I'm sorry. You doing okay?
Who is this?
Barton, I'm sorry. It's Barton Fink.
Barton, I'm afraid it's not a good time.
I'm sorry. I just feel like I know I shouldn't ask. I just need some kind of help. I have a deadline tomorrow.
All right, Barton. I'll see if I can slip away.
Oh, if you could, I'd be...
If I can. He gets jealous.
I need help, Audrey.
Try to slip out. If he quiets down, passes out. I'm afraid he thinks... Well, he said you were a buffoon, Barton.
Uh-huh.
He becomes irrational.
Uh-huh.
I'll see if I can slip away.
Clothed, Barton lies on the bed, holding his glasses on a pillow that's over his head. He wakes with a start, puts on his glasses and goes to the door.
Audrey, thank you for coming. Thank you.
Hello, Bob.
I'm sorry to be such a... Thank you.
That's all right, Barton. Everything's gonna be all right.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Yes, thank you. How's Bill?
Oh, he drifted off. He'll sleep for a while now.
She takes off her hat and smiles at Barton.
What is it you have to do exactly?
Well, I have to come up with an outline, I guess you call it. The story. The whole goddamn story, soup to nuts, three acts, the whole goddamn...
That's all right, Barton. You don't have to write actual scenes.
No, but the whole goddamn... Audrey, have you ever read any of Bill's wrestling scenarios?
Yes, I'm afraid I have.
What are they like? What are they about?
Well, usually they're simple morality tales. There's a good wrestler and a bad wrestler whom he confronts at the end. In between, the good wrestler has a love interest or a small child he has to protect. Bill would usually make the good wrestler a backwards type or a convict. And sometimes instead of a waif, he'd have the wrestler protecting an idiot man-child. Studio always hated that. Some of the scripts were so spirited.
Barton nods thoughtfully.
Barton. Look, it's really just a formula. You don't have to type your soul into it. We'll invent some names and a new setting, and I'll help you. It won't take any time at all. I did it for Bill so many times.
You did what for Bill?
Well, this.
You wrote his scripts for him?
She's taken aback.
Well, the basic ideas were frequently his.
You wrote Bill's scripts? Jesus, you wrote his. What about before that?
Before what?
Before Bill came to Hollywood.
Well, Bill was always the author, so to speak.
What do you mean, so to speak? Audrey, how long have you been his secretary?
Barton, I think we should concentrate on our little project.
I want to know how many of Bill's books you wrote.
Barton.
I want to know.
Barton, honestly.
She shakes her head.
Only the last couple.
Ha!
And my input was mostly editorial, really. After he'd been drinking.
I'll bet! Jesus, the grand productive days! What a goddamn phony! W.P. Mayo! William goddamn phony Mayo! Will his government escape? How did he escape?
Barton checks his watch.
Well, we don't have much time.
He sits down on the bed next to Audrey.
It'll be fine. Don't judge him, Barton. Don't condescend to him. I help Bill most by understanding him, by appreciating him. We all need understanding, Barton. Even you tonight. It's all you really need.
She strokes his hair. He turns to look at her. She holds the back of his head. They lean towards each other slowly. They kiss. He turns away. She holds his shoulder. He sinks down on the bed. She leans over him and removes his glasses, putting them to one side. She pushes his arm from across his chest and strokes his mouth with a finger. She kisses him. He pushes off his shoes as his feet dangle by the bed. The gloomy room is lit by the bedside lamp. The bathroom door is open. The lights are on either side of the mirror over the basin. A close-up of the basin plug hole and the black drain below. Barton is asleep in his bed in his underclothes. He wakes with a start, looking up at the ceiling, then all around, mouth open. He sits up in bed. He looks over at Audrey. She is on her side, her shoulders naked. He pulls back the bedclothes to reveal a mosquito on her back. He watches the mosquito biting Audrey. He swats it with his hand, leaving a bloody mark on her back. She doesn't stir. As he pulls down the sheet to look at the mark, a pool of blood spreads from beneath her body. He grabs her shoulder and turns her over. She is dead, eyes open, blood all over her torso. Barton, sitting up in bed, looks around the room and focuses on the door.
Barton?
Barton jumps out of bed and hurries over to the door. He opens it, looking ashen and sweaty.
Barton, are you all right?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
Are you sure?
No.
He slams the door in Charlie's face and walks away. He turns as if changing his mind, then leans against the wall, breathing heavily. He slowly shuffles over to his desk, gulping. He sits down, afraid to look over his shoulder at Audrey's bloody corpse in the bed. He blinks hard. He gets up and goes back to the door, opening it slowly. He leans out and spots Chet at the far end of the long corridor. He ducks back in and shuts the door. Chet, collecting shoes, looks down the corridor curiously. Sweating, Barton listens at the door. Chet, holding a pair of shoes, is also listening, his head on one side. He puts the shoes on his trolley and pushes it down the corridor. Barton opens the door again and steps out, watching Chet push his trolley around the corner at the end of the corridor. Still in his white, all-in-one underclothes, Barton tiptoes to the next door.
Barton, are you all right?
No. Can I come in?
Let's go to your room.
Charlie, I'm in trouble. You gotta help me.
Get a grip on yourself, brother. Whatever the problem is, we can sort it out.
Charlie, I'm in trouble. Something horrible's happened. I gotta call the police. Will you stay with me till they get here?
Don't worry about it, Barton. We can work it out.
Before you went, I didn't do this. I don't know how it happened, but I didn't. I want you to know that.
Charlie stares at Barton, looking bewildered. He nods.
Okay.
Looking over his shoulder at Barton, Charlie goes into the room.
Oh!
He looks horrified and clasps his hand over his mouth, running to the bathroom. He runs back into the room and drags Barton through the door from the corridor.
Jesus, Barton, what the hell is this? What are we gonna do?
I gotta call the police.
Hold on. Hold on.
I didn't do this. I did.
Hold on.
Not do this.
Hold on. Stop. Take a deep breath. Tell me what happened.
I passed out. I don't know. Won't the police be able to
stop? Stop with the police. Wake up, friend. This does not look good. They hang people for this.
But I didn't do it. Don't you believe me?
I believe you. I know you. Why should the police? Did you... Barton, between you and me, did you have sexual intercourse?
Charlie clasps his hand to his head.
Jesus, they could tell that.
Don't believe me! They're gonna have mercy!
You're in pictures, Barton. Even if they cleared you eventually, this would ruin you.
Charlie leads Barton by the arm. Charlie pats Barton on the back as he ushers him into the bathroom. Barton stares at his feet, then sits down next to the basin, head bowed. Sweating, Barton lifts his head. He watches Charlie carrying Audrey's body wrapped in a sheet out of the room, banging her head on the wall. He slaps Barton's face.
You passed out.
Where's Audrey?
She's dead, Barton! She's dead, if that was her name. Barton, listen to me. You gotta act as if nothing has happened. Put this totally out of your head. I know that's hard, but your play from here on out is just to go on about your business as usual. Give us some time to sort this out.
Charlie leaves. Barton, stunned, looks at his watch. It's 8 a.m. Lipnick is on a sun lounger by his pool.
Bart! So happy to see you! Sit, talk. Relax for a minute, then talk. Drink?
Yeah. Rye whiskey?
Boy, you writers work hard, play hard. That's what I hear anyway. Lou! Anyway, Ben Geisler tells me things are going along great. Says we got a real winner in this one. Let me tell you something. I'm counting on it. I've taken an interest. Nothing to fear, mind you. Hardly seems necessary in your case. A writer, a storyteller of your stature. Give it to me in bold strokes, Bart. Give me the broad outlines. I'm sitting in the audience. The lights go down. Capital logo comes up. Come on, huh?
Barton, unshaven, looks from side to side.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we fade in. It's a tenement building on the Lower East Side.
Great. He's poor, this wrestler. He's had to struggle.
And then... Well, can I be honest, Mr. Lipnick?
Can you? Jesus, you damn well better be. Jesus, if I wasn't honest in my business dealings... Well, I mean, of course, you can't always be honest, not with the sharks swimming around this town. But you're a writer. You don't think about those things. If I had been totally honest, I wouldn't be within a mile of this pool unless I was cleaning it. But that's no reason for you not to be. Honest, I mean, not cleaning the pool.
Lou offers Barton a whiskey and a crystal tumbler on a silver tray. He downs it in one. Lou sits next to him.
To be honest, I'm never really comfortable discussing work in progress.
I got it all worked out in my head, but sometimes if you force it into words prematurely, the wrong words. Well, your meaning changes, and it changes in your own mind, and you never get it back. So I just as soon as not talk about it.
Lou nods at Lipnick.
Mr. Fink, never mind me. Never mind how long I've been in pictures. Mr. Lipnick has been in pictures just about since they was invented. He practically invented them. I think if he's interested in what one of his contract employees is doing, that employee should be able to tell him if he wants to stay an employee. Right now, the contents of your head are the property of Capitol Pictures. If I was you, I would speak up, and pretty goddamn fast.
Lou looks over at stony-faced Lipnick.
You lousy kike, son of a bitch. You're telling this man, this artist, what to do?
Mr. Lipnick, I...
This man creates for a living.
Thank him for it, you son of a bitch, or you're fired.
Mr. Lipnick, that's really not necessary.
Get down on your knees, you son of a bitch. Get down on your knees and kiss this man's feet. Mr. Lipnick, please. Kiss this man's feet!
Barton glances at Lou. He hangs his head.
Get out of here! You understand me? Get out of here. You're fired. Get out of my sight.
Lou puts on his glasses, gets up and leaves. Barton watches, open-mouthed.
I apologize, Barton.
No, Mr. Breeze, actually, it's been a great help.
You don't have to cut the firm. It's very noble of you. These things happen in business.
I really would feel much better if you just reconsider.
Forget it, kid. I want you to put it out of your head. If that son of a bitch wouldn't apologize to you, then goddammit, I will. I respect your artistry and your methods. And if you can't fill us in yet, well, hell, we should be kissing your feet for your fine efforts.
He puts down his orange juice and kneels in front of Barton.
You know, in the old country, we were taught as very young children that there's no shame in supplicating yourself when you respect someone. On behalf of Capitol Pictures, the administration, and all of the stockholders, please accept this as a symbol of our apology and respect.
Lipnick kisses the sole of Barton's shoe. Barton sits in his room, staring at the huge bloodstain on his mattress, his mouth hanging open. He slowly turns and looks at the door. He gets up and opens it to Charlie.
Barton, can I come in?
Wearing a suit and hat, Charlie enters, carrying a case and a square parcel wrapped in brown paper and string. He puts it on the bedside table.
Jesus, you're leaving?
I have to, old-timer, just for a little while.
Jesus. Charlie,
Everything's okay, believe me. I know it's rough mentally, but everything's been taken care of.
Charlie, I got no one else here. The only person I know in Los Angeles that I can talk to.
Barton sobs on Charlie's shoulder. Charlie pats him on the back.
Like I'm losing my mind. Like I'm going crazy. I don't know what to do. I didn't do it. Believe me. I'm sure that Charlie...
You gotta get a grip on, brother. You just gotta carry on just for a few days till I get back. Try and stay here. Keep your door locked. Don't talk to anyone. We gotta keep our heads... and we'll figure it out.
Okay, but what if...
Don't argue with me. You asked me to believe you, and I do. Now, don't argue with me. Look, pal, can you do something for me? Keep that for me till I get back. It's just a lot of personal stuff, but I don't want to drag it with me. And I'd like to think it's in good hands. Funny, huh? When everything that's important to a guy, everything he wants to keep from a lifetime... and he can fit it all into a little box like that. I guess it's pretty pathetic.
It's more than I've got.
Well, keep it for me. Maybe it'll bring you good luck. Yeah, it'll help you finish your script. You'll think about me. Make me your rustler. Then you'll lick that story of yours.
Thanks, Charlie.
Yeah, sure.
I'll see you soon, friend. You'll be fine.
And you'll be back?
Don't worry about that, compadre. I'll be back.
Charlie salutes and leaves. Barton shuts the door, then turns and looks at his shabby room. He walks over to the bed and sits on the clean side of the blood-stained mattress, hands on his knees, looking shell-shocked. He starts to sob. Hotel corridor is empty. There are no shoes outside the doors. All the lights are on, but it's still gloomy. Barton sits at his desk in his vest and trousers, head bowed, without his glasses. The desk drawer is open, revealing a black leather-bound Gideon Bible. He takes it out and opens it at Daniel, chapter 2, the king's dream, verse 30. And the king, Nebuchadnezzar, answered and said to the Chaldeans, I recall not my dream. If ye will not make known unto me my dream and its interpretation, ye shall be cut in pieces, and of your tents shall be made a dunghill. Sweaty and unshaven, Barton swallows hard. He turns to Genesis. It reads, Fade in on a tenement building on Manhattan's Lower East Side. Faint traffic noise is audible, as is the cry of the fishmongers. He shuts the Bible, looking shell-shocked. Solemn, unshaven, in shirt and braces, Barton descends in the ornate lift with the old attendant motionless on his stool.
You read the Bible, Pete?
Holy Bible?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, I've heard about it.
Hands in pockets, Barton walks through the dimly lit reception area towards two men wearing trilbies smoking.
Fink?
Yeah.
Detective Mastronati.
Detective Deutsch.
LAPD.
Uh-huh.
Got some questions we want to ask you. Just routine. Sit down. What do you do, Fink?
I write.
Oh, yeah, what kind of write?
Well, as a matter of fact, I write for the pictures.
Big fucking deal.
Oh, my partner, to kiss your ass?
Would that be good enough for you?
No, I didn't mean to sound...
What did you mean?
I got respect for working guys like you.
Jesus, ain't that a load off? You live in 621?
Yeah.
How long you been up there, Fink?
Week, 8, 9 days.
Is this multiple choice?
You know this slob?
They pass him a mugshot of Charlie in dungarees looking mad.
Yeah, he lives next door to me.
That's right, Fink. He lives next door to you.
You ever talk to him? Once or twice. His name is Charlie Meadows.
Yeah, and I'm Buck Rogers.
Name's Munt. Carl Munt.
Also known as Madman Munt.
A little funny in the head.
What did he...
Funny. As in he likes to ventilate people with a shotgun and then cut their heads off.
Yeah, he's funny that way.
Started in Kansas City, couple housewives.
A couple of days ago, we got the same M.O. out in Los Feliz.
Doctor, Ear, nose, and throat man.
All of which is now missing.
Well, some of his throat was still there.
Physician, heal thyself.
Good luck with no fucking head.
Anyway.
Hollywood precinct finds another stiff yesterday. Not too far from here. This one's better looking than the doc.
Female Caucasian, about 30 years old. Nice tits, no head. Ever seen Munt with anyone fits that description?
But, you know, with the head still on.
No, I never saw him with anyone else.
So you did talk to Munt. What about?
Nothing, really. He said he was in the insurance business.
Yeah, and he's Buck Rogers.
No reputable company would hire a guy like that.
Well, that's what he said.
What else?
Trying to think. Nothing, really. He said he liked Jack Oakey pictures.
You know, ordinarily we say anything you might remember could be helpful. But I'll be frank with you, Fink. That is not helpful.
Notice how he's not writing it down?
Fink. That's, a Jewish name, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think this dump was restricted. Munt has disappeared. I don't think he'll be back. But give me a call if you see him.
He flicks his card at Barton contemptuously.
Or if you remember something that isn't totally idiotic.
Barton walks over to the parcel on his bedside table. He picks it up by the string and carefully carries it over to the desk, where he taps it. He holds it up to his ear and then studies it, open-mouthed, head tilted back. He carefully puts it down at the back of the desk. He sits down. He rests his elbows on the desk and stares at the box. He starts to type. He gets up and leaves the desk. He sits down again, putting cotton wool in his ears, twisting it in.
Fade if a young hussy opens the door to the burning house. Upon, if you were a man, a real man, you'd slap me. I put my mark on you first. Tell him, boy.
Floyd. With promoters, sir. Hey, dress, check. Lady. Boarding house. Painted women. Leah at the Berlin.
Like you, Esther.
With one lightning bolt with his mighty arms. Berlin.
She's a good woman, Ma. I don't care what.
So, Burley man, we have to deduct those expenses from your purse.
You even care for me after all these years?
On the line, sir, I have your call.
Hello, operator? I can't. Oh, God.
He pulls the cotton wool out of his ears.
Hello?
Garland, it's me. Yeah, I'm fine. I have to talk to you, Garland. I'm calling long distance.
What is it, Bud? Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine, Garland, but I have to talk to you. It's about what I'm writing. I think it's really big.
What
Not big in the sense of large. Although it's that too. I mean important. This may be the most important work I've ever done.
Barton, is everything okay? You sound a little...
Sound a little what?
You sound a little...
Thanks, Garland. Thanks for all the encouragement. Edward.
Replacing the cotton wool in his ears, Barton sits down again to type. The long corridor is empty. Barton types the end, pulls out the sheet and places it on a pile of paper. He picks up the manuscript, tidies the pages together, then puts it down, placing his earplugs on top. His desk chair is empty. He's in the shower. He is dancing wildly, jitterbugging with a girl in a red dress on a crowded dance floor, surrounded by soldiers in uniform and their partners. He lifts his knees jerkily, holding the hand of the girl. She smiles and laughs. He looks up, throwing his arms in the air. He spins her round expertly. He dances, leaving the girl, kicking his legs in a whirl of his own, then sidesteps back to her, holding her close. A sailor taps him on the shoulder.
Excuse me, buddy. Mind if I cut in?
This is my day, fella.
Hey, come on, buddy. I'm shipping out tomorrow.
I'm a writer, celebrating the completion of something good. Do you understand that, sailor?
Beat it, great.
Come on, buddy. Give the Navy a dance.
Let somebody else spin the day.
Step aside, 4I.
Hey, 4F, take a hike. Suck an
egg. Hey, don't sit on a tomato.
I'm a writer, you monsters. I create for a living. I'm a creator. I am a creator.
Screw me.
This is my uniform. This is how I serve the common man. This is where I...
A sailor flattens him with a punch. Mayhem breaks out on the dance floor as the soldiers and sailors start fighting. Barton lies on the floor looking up, mouth open, as a soldier and sailor grapple nearby. Some couples run off the dance floor. A trumpet player in a trilby stands for his solo. Barton walks back to his room down the long corridor, pausing outside his door.
Something in his eyes. Something. Mother, what's to become of him? Father, we'll be hearing from that crazy wrestler. And I don't mean a postcard. Fade out. The end.
He confronts the two detectives in his room.
I thought you said you were a writer.
No, I don't know, Duke. I kind of liked it.
Keep your filthy eyes off of that.
You made the morning papers, Fink.
Second one of your friends to wind up dead. You do get around, don't you, Fink?
Didn't tell us you knew the dame.
Sixth floor too high for you, Fink?
Give you nosebleeds.
They look at the blood-stained mattress.
Just tell me one thing, Fink. Where'd you put their heads?
Charlie. Charlie's back.
No kidding, bright boy. We smelt munt all over this. See the idea, man?
Tell us where the heads are. Maybe they'll go easy on you.
Only fry you once.
Could you two come back later? It's just too hot. My head is killing me.
All right, forget the heads. Where's Mund, Fink?
He teach you how to do it.
You two have some sick sex thing.
Sex? He's a man. We wrestled.
The detectives stare at him.
You're a sick fuck, Fink.
Charlie's back. It's hot. He's back.
They all look at the door. One of the detectives gets up, exhaling smoke, and goes out into the corridor. He stands in the middle of the corridor, looking down the length of it, arms hanging at his side.
Fred.
Fred handcuffs Barton to the metal bedstead, pinching and slapping his cheek.
Sit tight, Frank.
Fred joins the other detective in the corridor.
Why is it so goddamn hot out here?
They stare at the end of the corridor.
Duke.
The two detectives stand motionless. At the end of the corridor, smoke appears from the direction of the lift. Flames lick through the gap between the open door of the lift and the floor. The detectives reach for their guns.
Hunt!
They look nervous.
Hunt! Show yourself!
Flames appear at the end of the corridor. The taller of the two detectives is sweating profusely. He licks his lips anxiously. Smoke billows from the lift. Charlie steps out wearing a hat and carrying a small bag. He walks up the corridor a few paces, then stands still.
There's a boy, Munt. Put the policy case down and your mitts in the air.
Charlie stands motionless, flames behind him. He slowly puts his bag down.
He's complying.
Charlie shoots the detective.
Look upon me! I'll show you the life of the mind!
Charlie, gun in hand, charges down the corridor.
Look upon me!
Flames engulf the walls behind him.
I'll show you the life of the mind! I'll show you the life of the mind! I will show you the life of the mind!
Charlie shoots the second detective in the leg. The detective stares up at Charlie, wide-eyed with fear. The fire has spread up both sides of the corridor. Barton, terrified, sits handcuffed to the bed. Charlie reloads as he walks past Barton's open door, silhouetted against the blaze. He stands over the detective, resting the end of the rifle on his forehead.
Heil Hitler.
Yeah!
Charlie shoots the detective. Barton looks horrified. Charlie appears in the doorway, placing his rifle on a shelf above it.
Barton. Brother, is it hot? How you been, buddy? Well, don't look at me like that. It's just me, Charlie.
I hear it's Munt. Madman Munt.
Jesus, people can be cruel. It's not my build, it's my personality.
Sweating under his trilby, Charlie sits next to the bed, near Barton.
They say I'm a madman, Bart, but I'm not mad at anyone. Honest, I'm not. Most guys I just feel sorry for. It tears me up inside to think about what they're going through, how trapped they are. I understand it. I feel for them. So I try and help them out. Jesus.
He loosens his tie.
Yeah. I know what it feels like when things get all balled up at the head office. It puts you through hell, Barton. So I help people out. I just wish someone would do as much for me. Jesus, it's hot. Sometimes it gets so hot, I want to crawl right out of my skin.
But Charlie, why me? Why?
Because you don't listen!
Barton flinches. Charlie looks at him malevolently.
dripping again.
He puts a plug in his ear.
Come on, Barton. You think you know pain? You think I made your life hell? Take a look around this dump. You're just a tourist with a typewriter, Barton. I live here. Don't you understand that?
Barton looks lost for words.
And you come into my home and you complain that I'm making too much noise.
Charlie shuts his eyes as if about to cry. Barton looks down, searching for the right words.
I'm sorry.
Charlie's head is bowed. With a dismissive wave of his hand, he looks up.
Don't be.
Eyes fixed on Barton, Charlie stands up, towering over him. Barton looks up at him anxiously. Charlie kneels down at the foot of the bed and, using both hands, tries to prise apart the bars of the bed to which Barton is handcuffed. He grimaces with the effort. Barton stares at him, eyes wide. The bars start to bend. One of the bars comes loose. A decorative metal ball falls, rolling away.
I'll be next door if you need me.
Charlie stands up and walks towards the door.
Oh. I dropped in on your folks in New York. And Uncle Maury? Good people.
Barton looks horrified. Charlie smiles benignly.
By the way, that package I gave you, I lied. It isn't mine.
Charlie salutes and leaves. Barton looks stunned. Barton suddenly turns and lifts the other end of his handcuff off the bedstead. He picks up Charlie's parcel and his manuscript and, wearing a hat and overcoat, walks towards the door. Barton, sweating, stands in the blazing corridor. He watches Charlie looking for his room key, then opening his door, calmly entering the room. Barton turns and walks away down the long corridor. The walls either side of him are ablaze. He's on the phone outside Lipnick's office.
Fink, Samuel or Lillian Fink, 85 Fulton Street.
Or Uncle Maury.
I understand that, sir, but there's still no answer.
Mr. Fink?
Shall I check the trouble on the line?
Carrying the parcel, Barton is shown into Lipnick's office.
Fink?
Mr. Lipnick?
Colonel Lipnick, if you don't mind. Sit down. I was commissioned yesterday in the Army Reserve, Henry Morgan Dowrance. He's different.
Congratulations.
Well, actually, it hasn't officially gone through yet. I had wardrobe with this up. Gotta pull teeth to get anything done in this town. Can understand a little red tape in peacetime, but now it's all out warfare against the Japs. Little yellow bastards. They'd love to see me sit this one out.
Yes, sir, they are.
Anyway, I had Lou read your script for me. I gotta tell you, Fink, it won't wash.
With all due respect, sir, I think it's the best work I've done.
Don't gas me, Fink. If your opinion mattered, I guess I'd resign and let you run the studio. Well, it doesn't, and you won't. And the lunatics are not going to run this particular asylum, so let's put a stop to that rumor right now.
Yes, sir.
I had to call Beery this morning. Tell him we were pushing the picture back after all I told him about quality, about that Barton Fink feeling. How disappointed we were. Wally was heartbroken. The man was devastated. He was... Well, I didn't actually call him. Lou did. That's a fair description, isn't it, Lou?
Yes, Colonel.
Hell, I could take you through it, step by step, explain why your story stinks. But I won't insult your intelligence. Well, all right. First of all, this is a wrestling picture. The audience wants to see action, adventure, wrestling, and plenty of it. They don't want to see a guy wrestling with his soul. Well, all right, a little bit for the critics. But you make it the carrot that wags the dog. Too much of it they had for the exits. I don't blame them. There's plenty of poetry right inside that ring, Fink. Look at Hell 10 Feet Square.
Blood, Sweat, and Canvas.
Blood, Sweat, and Canvas. These are big movies, Fink, about big men. In tights. Both physically and mentally. Especially physically. We don't put Wally Beery in a fruity movie about suffering. I thought we were together on that.
Barton looks down.
Sorry if I let you down.
You didn't let me down, Fink, or even Lou. We don't live or die by what you scribble. You let Ben Geisler down. He liked you, trusted you. And that's why he's gone. He's fired. That man had a heart as big as the All Outdoors, and you fucked him. He tried to convince me to fire you, too, but no, that'd be too easy. Nah. You're under contract. You're going to stay that way. Anything you write is going to be the property of Capitol Pictures, and Capitol Pictures is not going to produce anything you write. Not until you grow up a little. You ain't no writer, Fink. You're a goddamn write-off.
I tried to show you something beautiful. Something about all of us.
You arrogant son of a bitch. You think you're the only writer that can give me that Barton Fink feeling? I got 20 writers under contract I can ask for a Fink-type thing from! You swell-headed hypocrite. You just don't get it, do you? You think the whole world revolves around whatever rattles inside that little kike head of yours. Get him out of my sight, Lou. I want him in town, though. He's still under contract. I want you in town, Fink, and out of my sight. Now get lost. There's a war on.
Lipnick, in uniform with gold braid and medals, turns his back on Barton and looks out of the window, hands behind his back. Waves crash over a rock on a sandy shore. Barton, in a suit, walks along the empty beach carrying the parcel. He stops in his tracks as a girl in a bikini walks towards him. They walk towards each other. Gulls waddle across the sand near the girl's feet. Barton sits on the beach, putting down the parcel. He clasps his hands around his knees. She looks over at him.
Beautiful day!
Huh?
He cups his ear with a hand. She sits nearby.
I said it's a beautiful day.
Yes, it is.
She nods her head, smiling.
What's in the box?
Barton stares at her.
I don't know.
Isn't it yours?
Barton frowns in the sunshine.
I don't know.
She nods and turns to face the sea.
You're very beautiful.
She smiles and looks down shyly.
Are you in pictures?
Don't be silly.
She turns and faces the sea, sitting on a towel, leaning back on her arms. She raises her right hand to shield her eyes against the sunshine as she gazes out to sea. Barton is transfixed at this exact recreation of the picture that was in his hotel room. Waves break on the shore. A gull dives into the water. The end.